It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey has returned from a trip to the Middle East during the President's Day recess. The purpose of his trip, to explore, research, and investigate the issue of terrorism financing. Senator Casey met with officials in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. He also traveled to Turkey, where he assessed efforts to curtail ISIS's illicit smuggling networks and other financial support. There was also a stop in Israel. He joins us now by phone. Senator Casey, thanks for being with us.
Paul, great to be with you. Thank you.
Senator, what did you learn during your trip to the Middle East, particularly as it relates to the efforts to curtail ISIS's illicit smuggling networks and other financial support?
Well, I certainly learned on the positive side that this issue for these countries, especially for the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Turks, this issue of cutting off these financial networks, and especially when it comes to terrorist organizations and groups like ISIS, that it's a major concern. It's in sharper focus now than it was a couple of years ago. But on the downside is they still have a long way to go to combat this problem and to deal with this problem in ways that we would expect or in using strategies that are comparable to ours. Now, sometimes they've gotten to this issue late. They haven't set up the process to investigate or prosecute and fully hold accountable individuals involved in getting funding to ISIS or a terrorist group. So sometimes they don't have the structures to do this. Sometimes the political will is lacking. That's less of a problem now, if for no other reason than these countries themselves are being confronted by ISIS and other terrorist threats. Then thirdly, the problem is that they're often distracted, meaning ISIS, the battle against the war, I should say, against ISIS is not their number one concern. They may have concerns in other parts of the world or other threats. For example, Turkey probably has a more advanced terrorism financing or cutting off a financing strategy than the Saudis or the Qataris, but Turkey's number one concern is their internal threat from another terrorist organization called PKK. That's their number one concern. They're also focused on Assad, getting rid of Assad, and the Syria internal conflict, and ISIS is probably third. So sometimes when you're distracted, you're not as effective at cutting off financing. And we had, within 2 hours of leaving downtown Ankara, the capital of Turkey, we left to go to the airport, and 2 hours later, a bomb went off targeting the Turkey's military. So I get it when they say they've got concerns that are more immediate, but we have to keep pushing these countries to do more, especially in light of the war against ISIS, but also long term in terms of just the challenge that terrorism presents today that it wasn't around 25 years ago.
What is important for us to know about how ISIS is being financed and what the things are that Saudi Arabians and those in Qatar and Turkey, for that matter, can do to cut off that financing?
Yeah, part of it is to focus on it, and they have done that, but you have to also have the capability to deal with it, meaning that, for example, if you're, and by the way, the Saudis are ahead of the Qataris on this. The Saudis may not be as advanced as the Turks are. Turkey, for example, is part of this organization that goes by the acronym FATF, F-A-T-F, meaning it's a financial action task force organization. It's an international organization that sets standards for anti-money laundering and countering financing of terrorism. So that should be kind of low bar, even though it's not easy to become a member of that task force. In other words, Turkey's there, they're a member of the task force, but they still have a long way to go. Saudi Arabia and Qatar still are not there. So they've got a ways to go to even get to where Turkey is. So I guess I'd say it this way. If this were simply about the international banking system, meaning using new technology, new software to track dollars, to cut off financing that way, to use that as we did when we put pressure on the Iranians, for example, before the agreement, and continue to put pressure as we should on the Iranian regime when they should be sanctioned. Using that system alone is a huge challenge, right? But with ISIS, you have some old-fashioned ways they get money. They get money from black market oil sales, so they have hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks moving oil around. Now, our military is able to target them today, so that's one way to cut off some of that money, the actual military strategy. But then there are all kinds of smuggling that goes on, the smuggling of antiquities, valuable pieces of art from hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago that ISIS uses to sell on another kind of black market to get money. ISIS will tax people that they hold as captives, or when they're in charge of a jurisdiction after they've conquered a territory, they'll tax people in that territory. They have all kinds of ways of getting money, and we have to have the strategies employed to knock down each of those programs or strategies they put in place to get money. So it's a more complicated problem today, the financing problem, because terrorism itself is more complicated and sometimes multifaceted. So the old ways of just tracking money through the banking system isn't enough to prevent them from having these dollars. Now, the reason we do it is because if they don't have money, they can't pay their fighters, or they can't pay them enough. And if they can't do either of those, they can't extend their so-called caliphate, which injures their ability to recruit worldwide. If they don't have enough funding, they can't pay for weapons. They can't pay for all kinds of military items that they need to conduct warfare. So cutting off their money is about as important a part of the strategy as any kind of military aspect.
You say that it would be beneficial for every member of the U.S. Senate to travel to the Middle East to obtain a full understanding of what goes on there. What else might they learn if they were to do what you did and travel to the places you did in the Middle East?
Well, they would probably have a better sense of it, and a lot of colleagues do. I mean, I know of a group in January, about eight Democrats who traveled together, and they had a similar itinerary. They were in Turkey, they were in Saudi Arabia, at least, also in Israel, I think. So they had a good exposure to it. And most members of the Senate at some point in the course of a year get this kind of exposure to these problems. But I think they would probably find what I found, which is they've made progress in these places, but not nearly enough. And it would be a reminder that we take our justice system for granted. With all the flaws in our system, it's a much better system than almost any in the world. I think also they would, if more senators were able to take a similar trip, one of the stops we made in Qatar is one of their main metropolitan areas is Doha, and right outside of the main commercial district, there's a military base where we have Americans and other countries literally under one roof operating the so-called Combined Air Operations Center, which they sometimes go by the acronym CAOC. That Combined Air Operations Center is a marvel. It's just absolutely remarkable what happens there, where these Americans and other countries sitting down and coordinating the daily and nightly air operations that are being used against ISIS. So it's a remarkable use of American brain power and military acumen to be able to conduct those operations. So when someone stands up and says, "Oh, the strategy against ISIS isn't working," well, you should visit a place like that before you condemn the policy, because these people are doing very good work, along with our special operations forces and our diplomats and those who are putting pressure on ISIS every day. So that's something they would learn, and very few members of the Senate have taken the tour of this this military base called Al Udeid, which is a great testament to American fighting men and women, and also the great leadership on the ground. The top person there is Lieutenant General Brown, who gave us a briefing which was classified, but something he said in public recently is very helpful. He said, successful strikes on oil facilities and on monetary centers have resulted in Daesh, or another word for ISIS, or ISIL, cutting pay to their fighters. So that shows that if you're focused on cutting off their financing, in this case, if you can use military power to literally blow up or destroy, you know, a safe or a place where they're storing lots of their cash, you can actually have an impact on the fighters.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey, who has just returned from an extensive trip to the Middle East. Senator Casey, I wanted to ask you about how a possible ceasefire, there are discussions ongoing, as I'm sure you know, between Russia and Syria about a ceasefire right there. How might that impact this situation?
Well, I think any ceasefire that means a real cessation, a real stopping of the violence, will help on a whole host of fronts. Because one of the arguments I made, and I had a point of view years ago that we should have been more, figured out a way to be more aggressive against Assad. Now, I may not have been right about that, but I really believe that we should have put more pressure on him, that we might have gotten him to the negotiation table earlier than we have. But that's all water under the bridge. He's at least his people on his behalf are sitting down finally and apparently agreeing to a ceasefire.
And when you say pressure, Senator, you mean putting more pressure on him to resign,
ideally getting him to resign by way of pressure, or at least pressure that gets him to the table saying, I have to negotiate, not because I want to, but because I have to.
What kind of pressure would that have been?
Well, way back in 2011, I was the first member of the Senate to call for him to be to go and to put pressure on him militarily. One thing that I think could have been done early on, this is just is that if there was a way with the international community to bomb his airfields, he would have had a lot less in the way of capacity to use barrel bombs. So they drop, you know, from helicopters, drop these horrific bombs that just explode and all kinds of shrapnel comes flying out and you can kill hundreds of people at a time. He was dropping them on schools and hospitals. I mean, the kind of horror that this guy has brought to his country, more than 400,000, some people think it's as high as 450,000 people killed, basically because of one man, Bashar al-Assad. So I was for aggressive steps on him, against him. But to your question about what this ceasefire could mean, it could mean that if Assad isn't killing in this time period for a week or 2 weeks or a couple of months, that makes it harder for ISIS to recruit, because one of the best recruiters for ISIS has been Bashar al-Assad, meaning when people saw Sunni Muslims being killed, by Assad, that was one of the best rallying cries for ISIS to say, join us, we'll defeat Assad, we'll defeat the Americans, we'll defeat everybody. And that was a great incentive for people to join ISIS. If Assad's violence stops, then ISIS has a bad day recruiting, in my judgment.
You know, another thing that people say is a recruiting tool for ISIS is the prison at Guantanamo Bay. President Obama mentioned that he feels that it should be closed. What are your feelings on the matter? Because it's certainly getting a lot of resistance from members of Congress on this.
Yeah, I agree on the goal. I just haven't had a chance to review his proposal yet. But that's something that I think at some point this year there's likely to be a vote, or maybe more than one vote, on what to do. I think we've got to come to a point where it finally does get closed. I don't know if that's possible in light of the divisions in Congress. You got Republican senators who won't even hold a meeting with the Supreme Court nominee, let alone vote on a nominee, which is I think, a dereliction of duty. But it's going to be difficult to get a bipartisan agreement on closing Guantanamo when you can't even have senators of one party even meeting with a Supreme Court nominee, which is really bizarre. I don't know why that is, but so it's difficult to get a consensus in Congress, and I don't know where that leaves the president, whether the lawyers would tell him he's got executive authority he can exercise, or whether that authority is too circumscribed to do anything meaningful.
Going back to your trip to the Middle East, Senator, you are on record as saying that you would not support sending U.S. ground troops except for special forces
right.
to the fight. Did your recent trip to the Middle East alter your thinking at all?
No, it didn't. There are two reasons. Number one is I don't think it's right for the United States. I don't think it makes sense for us. Number two, I think it would actually hold the potential over time to make the problem worse. In other words, you could certainly have a short-term military victory over ISIS, but you're not going to kill the horrific and really perverted idea that led to ISIS. That will still germinate and grow, so you'd be back at it years from now, if not a shorter time frame. So I actually don't believe that it will work over time. It might work for, you know, our if we put ground troops, they could wipe out ISIS probably pretty quickly, but ISIS would be back, and we'd be in this year after year after year. But number three, the other reason not to send our ground troops is you turn the whole coalition in the region, meaning even Sunni Muslim countries who should be doing the fighting, because it's their region and it's their people, their religion, so to speak. You would enable them to stand on the sidelines and be what I've called coat holders, meaning, you know, the old playground scenario where someone says, I'm not going to fight. You do the fighting. I'll hold your coat. And when you're done fighting, I'll give you back your coat. We need fighters. We don't need coat holders. And our government, our taxpayers are contributing mightily, paying billions of dollars for airstrikes, and we should continue that. We're paying a lot of money to invest in diplomatic initiatives. We should continue that. We're providing all kinds of humanitarian aid. The American people have given over $5 billion in humanitarian aid, and that's good. We should do more and keep doing more. So we're more than doing our part. And some countries in the region are taking in a lot of refugees. The Turkey that we sometimes criticize and have tensions with, Turkey and Jordan and Lebanon, these countries have taken in probably the equivalent of America taking 50 million refugees, literally, if you compare it to our population, compared to their population. So proportionally, they've done great things on refugees. But so you have some countries in the region that are doing a lot on refugees and contributing fighters and other military contributions. But other countries in the region that aren't helping at all. They're not providing air power. They're not taking refugees. They're not doing a good job on terrorist financing. They're not providing a lot of things that we would expect members of a coalition to. So I think we've got my opinion on ground, you know, combat ground troops didn't change. But my view or my sense of urgency about getting more countries to do a better job on terrorism financing, I think, has only been enhanced. We got to push hard at least to get these countries up to the level of being part of this task force. And that means they've got to really put in place new institutions, new personnel, new dollars, so they can find a financier and say there's a financier in Riyadh or in Doha. They can find that person, they can arrest them, prosecute them, put them in jail, because I think financiers and facilitators can be as guilty as someone on the battlefield for ISIS.
Last question for you, Senator Casey. You had said last month that the Obama administration had not been doing a good job of telling the American people when progress is made in the fight against terrorism. What do you think that the Obama administration has to do better in this regard?
Well, part of it is, look, I've been critical of them not putting information out about what's happening in the war against ISIS and not reporting on good news. You know, there has been some progress made. They don't do a good job of advertising that and being honest about what's not working. But I've also been critical of Republicans in the Senate who just do kind of categorical condemnation. they just categorically say nothing's working, the president's wrong, and then they walk away. They don't offer any constructive solutions. It used to be that warfare and the conduct of war policy was bipartisan, and the politics stopped at the water's edge, as a great senator from Michigan said in the 1940s, Vandenberg. We should fight like heck and debate the policy, but we should all try to come together on a policy that works instead of just criticizing the president. But I've told the president and his team that when there's a vacuum for information, meaning no pictures or evidence of what's working or not working, that the vacuum gets filled by a lot of the hot air of Washington, which is not helping anybody. So their team needs to tell people more about the gains they've made against ISIS, what's happening on the ground. ISIS is being denied territory. They've lost about a third of the territory they had. The airstrikes are having an impact. We're starting to see the Iraqi fighters stand up and take them on. The good success in Ramadi. Still major challenges ahead in some of these other places in Iraq and Syria, but they gotta tell us what they're doing, what the strategy is over and over again, show pictures of how it's working, in addition to being honest about what's not working.
Senator Bob Casey has been our guest, joining us to discuss his recent trip to the Middle East. Senator Casey, thank you so much for being with us and being so generous with your time.
Paul, same to you. Thanks for all the time.